And welcome back to Brainchild, a place where we unlock our potentials in our life and in our careers. This is your host, Patricia, and in this episode, we're going to talk about building an online presence to create and deliver impact with Katie Tracy. Katie is a YouTuber with a channel named Katie Tracy, with almost 200,000 subscribers now. She was also the co-host of the Secret Syllabus podcast, co-produced by iHeartRadio and The Female Quotient. And her most recent brainchild is her new nonprofit called I Believe, which has created a global educational community providing IB resources for high school students across 160 countries. And while taking on these projects, Katie has built so many valuable connections online, and I think it's at once a blessing and a consolation that even if we don't get to meet people in the flesh right now, we can connect to just about anybody and form genuine friendships with like-minded people who also share the same vision as you. And I should also mention, Katie is a friend of mine from Cornell and she studies information science. And so here we are. Hello, Katie.
Hey, Patricia.
Hi, great to see you.
Virtually, you too.
How has your winter break been?
You know, for the first time, I feel like I've actually been able to get rest because normally, even, you know, in Cornell, you know the culture, how it goes. It's very go, go, go. And I feel like this winter break, I've been able to catch my breath, finally read books, watch TV shows, and just not plan a lot of things. And it's been really great.
That's really great to hear. I'm also very used to being on the run. And I also have a lot of friends like that as well. And I hope that they also are getting the well-deserved break. Let's first dive into how we met first, because I think it's kind of a funny story.
Definitely.
So excuse me for surprising you in the middle of the episode, but let's take a small pause. In this section, Katie and I talked about how we first met last winter break in 2020 at an airport waiting for a flight to Ithaca. And there were several of us Cornell students trying to get to campus to our spring semester. And we were stuck inside this airport for 7 to 8 hours because there was a huge snowstorm and everybody was in this unsettling fear that we would never make it on campus. And because this ended up being a long discussion, I'm going to skip forward where we talk about how we had each other and we bonded over this shared experience. And then we'll hear how we actually started our spring semester, but then the pandemic cut through in the middle of it and sent us all back home, and how that has created many changes for Katie. We ended up like waiting in the airport for the entire day. I feel like it was like 7 hours.
It was a long time. And I think we were just also just asking the desk constantly if there were other flights opening up, even to like other random, you know, towns I've personally never heard of. But now I know, because they're, you know, adjacent areas that will somehow help us get to Ithaca.
Mm-hmm. And I remember like it was you, me, and then a couple of other girls around your age. And then I fell asleep on like the seats. And then you were talking with your friend.
Yeah, so the girl at the airport was actually one of my closest friends, Angela, and I had been staring at her across the, like, gate, because we were sitting maybe, like, I don't know, 3-4 rows away, and I was like, she looks really familiar, but she had dyed her hair, it was, like, short, and I was like, I'm not sure if it's her or not, but then, because I've been trying to make eye contact with her ever since, and finally, when she looked up, I was like, yo, Angela, and I don't know, I think that moment really helped, because it just always helps to know another friend on the same route. And I think it was even better when we also met you and all the other people, because suddenly it wasn't scary anymore.
And then you did have to go back home in the Philippines mid-semester, right?
I did.
Mm-hmm. I think I saw your packing video, like you had 24 hours to pack.
Yeah, thank you. I definitely stress vlogged. I think that's a habit of mine, is when I'm like super stressed and I need someone to talk to, but I also need to be alone, I just take to my camera and vent.
Wow, that's actually very fascinating. Does it come easy to you to just talk and like be open and honest to the camera?
I think now it has become easy, but when I started making videos like 6 years ago, it wasn't. Like, I very much didn't know who I was because I was 13, I was in middle school, you know, just all the insecurity issues, friendships were just like, But I think over the years, when I made more videos and when, you know, I had to deal with haters, I had to deal with people who didn't support my channel or, I don't know, would send me hate, I think it all strengthened me and made me more confident in who I was. And it made me realize that it's not worth trying to be, you know, oh, it sounds so cheesy, but, you know, someone that you're not, someone that you think will please other people. And, you know, it sounds easy right now, but it was a very hard journey to get here 6 years. And even today, I still struggle with it, but I think I'm a lot more settled and happy.
Wow. And to think that you started, I thought you would have started in high school, but are you still like 19, 20?
I'm 20 now. Turned 20 in October.
Wow. And you're like a couple years younger than I am, but I feel like I would easily pick you as someone I look up to, like, in the Cornell community, because you do so many exciting things, which we'll like talk about here today.
Oh, you're so sweet. Thank you.
Yeah, of course. So you've been doing YouTube for over 6 years, almost 7 years, right?
Yep.
Yeah. What kind of videos were you making when you first started, and how do you think your content evolved over time?
It's changed a lot. When I started, I was very much in the beauty guru scene, even though I always sucked at makeup, and I followed a lot of people like Zoella, Bethany Moda back when they were the big thing. And, you know, the popular videos were like DIY Tumblr outfits or DIY easy snacks. So those were a lot of my videos. I also, being the like information science nerd I am, did a lot of videos on like the best free apps. And mostly it was very, I think, creative, I'd say. It was very crafty. Whereas when I entered high school, the content changed a bit because I got really serious with academics, because I was like, I really want to go abroad. I need to, you know, work hard to get an acceptance. And then my content started changing to more like advice, you know, study tips, IB tips, which is the program I did. And even after I went to college, I continued with the advice, because now people were asking for college admissions advice. And later on, I'm happy to say that it's now transitioned more to vlogs, and videos have integrated more smoothly into my life, because a lot of it is just vlogging the other things I do love. Mm-hmm.
So would you say it was kind of following whatever interest you had in the different stages of your life?
Exactly. I think like what I love is that, or what I hope is that, I'll be able to look at my YouTube channel one day and see, you know, exactly what I was thinking at this time. And sometimes it's really cringy, because I have videos where I'm like roasting people, reacting to hate comments, and I'm like, dang girl, like, did you really have to go off on them? But, you know, it was like, I think another product of my insecurity back then. I really loved to like banter with people, but I think I'm a bit more like chill now. Mm. So I'm like, all right, y'all can hate whatever.
I see. And speaking of like people reaching out to you for help, what are your audience demographics like age bracket wise, geographic locations?
Yeah, so the interesting thing is my demographic has always been mostly viewers from the US, even though, like, even when I was in the Philippines, it was always like 40 to 50% US. And now it's still mostly US, but the number's gone from like 40% to 30%, and the rest is very international. So my numbers, if I remember correctly, is first is US 30%, Philippines roughly 10%, India 10%, and then UK and Australia both like 5%. And if you think about it, that's only like 60%. So it just shows how international my audience has been, which has been so amazing, because when I started YouTube, I didn't see a lot of like international YouTubers. I think one reason I have a lot of viewers from around the world is because I started speaking up about being an international student more, and it seems a lot of people also have that shared dream of wanting to study abroad. And so it's been really awesome to meet other people just like me online.
Yeah, I've noticed that you did make quite a few videos related to or dedicated to international students, and you provided them with information and resources about like getting into college in the States. I think it was like November recently in the last year, I watched a video of yours that was titled something like Waking Up from the American Dream. Mm-hmm. And I just like remember being so shocked at like the rawness of it and the transparency and just the courage to pour out your heart onto a video. And yeah, and then you talked about like certain expectations you had going into college, and then how your thoughts have matured and developed over time, values have changed a little bit too. And now that it's been a little more time since you made the video, what is your sentiment now? Do you feel a little more detached, or is it still like very raw in your heart?
I think doing the video, first of all, has given me a lot of closure because, you know, before that, a lot of my channel had been revolved around my excitement for going abroad. It's the reason I started vlogging in the first place, is I was like, wow, this is where life begins for me to just, you know, explore myself on my own for the first time in my life. And I am, first of all, like super grateful for all the opportunities America has given. I think the video, let me think about how to rephrase this. There was a lot to unpack. So I think before I went to the States, I definitely had a very glorified image of America. And I think it's partly because the Philippines used to be a colony of the States. And I realize now why I thought the way that I did, because, you know, I realized not all international students share it. Like, some countries do more than others. But I realized it was a unique part of growing up with this colonial mindset, is what they call it, where you idolize the country that colonized yours before. And I think the interesting thing is that America helped me unlearn that, or, you know, it also helped me learn it. But if not for my education abroad, I don't think I would have been able to see that and analyze how I came to that conclusion. Because I think a lot of the, like, what I like about the education system in America is it really challenges you to, you know, question everything and like how you got to the beliefs that you did. And I also think part of this is because I did an international program, the IB. But I think, you know, in that moment, it made me fully let go of it. Because back then, when I was studying it, or when I realized it, it was kind of still detached, because it was like, okay, I'm aware of this, but my heart doesn't really feel it yet. It was only when the international student ban happened that I was like, oh my gosh, I really am being deported. And I had never thought of myself, I don't know, like, I never imagined I would have that kind of struggle of, you know, being unable to enter a country. And even though the ban, you know, later got rescinded or, like, postponed, it still really stuck with me. Because in those, you know, 72 hours or however long it happened, I realized, like, I am not a citizen of the United States. I won't have the same opportunities. Like, I am grateful 100%, but it was just a reminder that I have my own country, too, and I wanted to start, you know, giving more credit to my own country, because I think for too long I've been looking elsewhere instead of seeing what I had right in front of me.
Mm-hmm. Similar to what you said, I think my experience just coming back home to Korea last summer, it was very freeing unexpectedly, because even though, so I was supposed to have an internship like everybody, and then it was canceled like everybody. And it was supposed to be in real estate, but then because I had a free summer, I had all the time to myself to really think truly what I wanted to do. And I also had the idea that the ideal and desirable place I want to be is, after graduation, is to be in the States. And I had specific ideas about the kind of jobs I would be getting. But I became like free from those thoughts that like having specific locations and certain jobs was more superior than others, and I'm more open-minded to consider other opportunities. So I found my passion for media, and that's what I'm intending to go into. And I'd be happy to try living in a different country that I've never experienced. Like, I think Singapore would be like a really fun place to live in. And then going back to what you said about appreciating your country, I feel like I've always thought that I spent half of my life in Korea and then the other half in the States. And I always thought I've done everything I could in Korea and I know the ins and outs of it. But this year, or in the last year, has brought me new perspectives about my country. Like, the things that I thought were cons actually became pros in some way. For example, people conform to rules, and sometimes it can be stricter because you're not always, not everyone always questions everything, like you said, but it also helps us stay safe. And a lot of good came out of that as well. So yeah, I wanted to like show you my appreciation for your video and then also your post on Instagram about that.
Oh, thank you. And that's awesome to hear that even like you seem to have doing a lot of self-reflection and have found new appreciation for your country. I really relate, especially with the opportunities and looking at, you know, other places in Southeast Asia, or for me, even Europe, I think has been really exciting because, yeah, interestingly, this time has opened my eyes to just the world of possibilities that really exists. And I, you know, I'm glad that I've opened my perspective and don't only think there's one country for me anymore.
Mm-hmm. Do you know what kind of job you'd be looking to get?
Yeah, I'm not sure what specific job exactly, but I think I have an idea of like what field or what work I want to be doing. And I think it's a mix of something creative, so along the lines of my YouTube podcast, which I think we'll talk about later, and also social impact. Because, you know, the interesting thing is when I accepted that, okay, my future may not be in the States, I was like, okay, well, the same opportunities I want to pursue, you know, were like in tech or whatever. So I was like, if it was Google and Apple, then now I could just look at the Google and Apple branches in Southeast Asia, a different country. But then the more I thought about, or like the more I understood the problems in my country in light of COVID, the more I realized like I don't just want to, if I'm in the Philippines if I'm in the Philippines, which is a developing country, I actually don't want to be doing that work anymore. I think I'd much rather prefer doing something with social impact, because there's so much room now for help and development, because COVID has disrupted, you know, so many like education systems, health systems. Poverty is a big problem in the Philippines, and I feel like my goals have changed. It was either, you know, work in the States because their like companies are amazing and there's so much to learn from them, but now I don't know if the same opportunities are in the Philippines. And also I think there are other fields where I can much better help, and I feel like I already have the experience, or at least a passion for.
And I feel like that's, even though you might be taking on a new project, it's still within your core competencies, because like I was looking through your LinkedIn the other day and just like the projects you've done. I think your bio said it's like the intersection of entrepreneurship, technology, and design, which like sounds like something you would excel at. I'm excited to see what you end up doing after college as well.
Yeah, thank you. And course. I'm flattered by the LinkedIn stuff.
I do love to stalk people.
Me too. Gotta do it anonymously though.
So yes, I did want to go into your podcast because it's one of your most recent projects. And since I'm new to this, I thought I could pick your brain and learn a lot from it. So
yeah, let's do it.
Yeah. So it's called The Secret Syllabus, and what relationship do you have with iHeartRadio and the Female Quotient that's with your podcast?
Mm-hmm. So for me, it started with someone from the Female Quotient reaching out to me around March, also when the pandemic was happening, or like when I had just first returned to the Philippines, and she was telling me about this podcast that they wanted to start with college students specifically, because a lot of conversations in the workplace for advancing, you know, women were mostly after college, but they wanted to start the conversation early and have hosts who were currently in college. So I talked to them, told them a bit about myself, and they told me they'd love for me to audition, or if I had any other co-hosts that they had in mind. And I had referred one of my YouTube friends, Hannah. I love her. We've actually never met in person, but we've been YouTube friends for like 6 years. Like when I started, she was there already. And both of us auditioned. I think they were choosing a few other people, but thankfully Hannah and I got it. And from there, we worked directly with Female Quotient, and it's actually Female Quotient who works with iHeartRadio to produce it. So my relationship is more with Female Quotient and also our producer, Wonder Media Network.
Wow. And did they come up, when they approached you, did they come up with the concept and the idea for the podcast? Or was it something that you also contributed to?
Yeah, so when they came, it was actually still a pretty general idea. So we just knew that we wanted it to be for college students, by college students, but I think one of the best parts is we got to be part of that process of coming up with a name, of thinking about the episode ideas, and they were always so welcoming and collaborative, and it was awesome to really feel, you know, like they cared about what we as hosts had to say, and I think that made it all the more rewarding.
Mm-hmm. I listened to a few episodes, like I said before, and I love that how conversational it is, and like, that's what I want to maintain throughout my episodes as well. Did you have a say in, like, the specific content that goes into each episode and who you bring in as a guest?
Yeah, we got to suggest guests for the brainstorming process. So we had a huge list of maybe at least, like, 50 people. We thought of maybe 4 to 5 potential guests for each episode, and eventually, you know, we narrowed it down. Mm-hmm. But even when we selected the guest, we would be the ones to come up with the questions. Actually, the Wonder Media Network has helped a lot with helping us do the research, and they also help with a vision for it. So they have a general idea of, like, okay, this is the topic we hope to cover. But if they were always super open to about... if we had our own questions, we could add it, and we could also be really flexible if the conversation changed. But for the most part, we got to influence the direction that the interview took. So that was also awesome.
Wow, it's amazing that you had the creative freedom to contribute that way. And it must have been that, like, because you've already built up your online presence through YouTube, that they were able to, like, was that how they discovered you?
Yeah, you know, that's really interesting, because I've also wondered how they found me. I was like, how in the world did they think of me? Like, why me? And I asked, and apparently an agency had referred them to me. So I'm not, like, super clear how it happened, but I definitely think it had to do with YouTube and the college vlogs I'd been doing, or I don't know, there's like no way they would have known me otherwise, I feel.
Yeah. And somebody who has done media and who is good at storytelling, was podcasting something like on your mind, or was it a pleasant surprise when they approached you?
Okay, first of all, what the heck, when you were like good at storytelling and media, I was like, that's you, girl, that's you. Oh, well, when you said me at the end, I was like, wait, what? But yeah, funny thing is, I think a few months before they reached out to me, I'd really been wanting to do a podcast, and I was reaching out to some Cornell orgs. There's actually one on Cornell, plug State of the Pod. My friend started it. Okay, you know what? Can I plug her? My friend Union started it.
Yeah.
And I was just thought it was really awesome that Cornell was having this podcasting club, and I actually was trying to get involved for the longest time, but, you know, Cornell sometimes has a lot of stuff, so I wasn't able to, but it had been in my mind for the longest time, because I really loved listening to podcasts, and I could imagine myself, you know, talking, like, I'm talkative enough, I was like, I would love to podcast too.
Wow, okay. I've been thinking about podcasting for the longest time, and it even took even longer for the ideation to be complete. And then I think it took me like 2 months to come up with the name of the podcast. So I'm so excited that now I'm just ready to roll it out.
I'm so happy you did this podcast, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
Like, I love seeing other Cornell students do something creative, and like the thought you've put into this is a lot, and I really hope it goes well, and I'm honored to be here.
Thank you. Oh, I did have a question. Is it too late for me to join Cornell Creatives as a second semester senior?
Oh my gosh, no, please join. We would literally like love to work together on, like, I don't know, with this podcast or anything, because this year, little, I guess, insider is we're planning on doing something called Creator Studio, which is a program to help people who have ideas, whether it's like writing a book or starting a podcast or starting a YouTube channel, and just giving them the support and mentorship. And I was thinking of helping out with video and streaming, including podcasting. So it'd be super fun.
That's amazing. So you're a president at the club, right?
I was, you but were. I'm actually transitioning. Yeah, okay. We're actually transitioning it now to two amazing girls.
To those who are not familiar with the organization, do you want to tell us a little bit about it,
Cornell Creatives? So Cornell Creatives is an organization my friends and I started to empower student creators at Cornell. It started because when a lot of us came into Cornell, we had loved various different creative projects. So design, music, for me was video, but we struggled to find other people with the same interest. At least in my experience, I was very much in like the STEM and engineering circle, and you know, it's a lot of work. So for me, it felt like people were either A, studying in the libraries on weekends, or B, partying super hard. And I didn't fall into any of those. Okay, so that's obviously a generalization, right? But for me, it felt like those were the only two things my friends did or people I knew did. Whereas I, on a Friday night, would choose to stay alone in my dorm cranking out these YouTube videos. And, you know, I just thought about how much, like, how there must be other people doing this out there at Cornell that I didn't know how to reach. And so we started this club in hopes that we could start attracting and bring all these people together, or even people who, you know, previously never thought they were creative or had always wanted to do something but didn't have the resources to do so. We wanted to be that for them.
Wow. And I was looking through like the student profiles of all the members, and it was amazing that they weren't limited to one thing they did. Some people were dancers while being designers and video producers and musicians. I remember looking through to see like, is there anything I can take up so that I can like apply to join the club? But now I can send the link to my podcast and I'll put in my application.
Please do. And yeah, I know it's amazing, and I felt that way too. You know, I can't take credit for their creativity because we only hope to showcase what already exists. But yeah, that was the same awe I felt when I was like, oh my gosh, there are so many friggin' talented people. And I'm glad that they now hopefully have this platform to share it.
I was a little surprised when you said you were in your room doing your creative projects. Whenever I saw you at school on campus, you were always surrounded by friends, having like fun conversations with them, and I always would have thought you were like a complete extrovert. But would you say like you're a mix of both as well then?
That's a really great observation, actually. So my rule is like, if I'm not in the mood to like socialize, or if I don't have energy, I know I'm stressed because I have a video I have to upload, like you will not see me outside. Like you just won't run into me because I will be in my room editing videos. But if I'm not doing that, and if I'm, you know, feeling my usual extroverted self, I'd say I'll be out there. And when I'm out there, I definitely like make sure to spend it with friends and really like enjoy being with them fully.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like a healthy balance of, you know, focusing on yourself and then enjoying the company of others. And that's, I think, what I always strive for as well.
Yeah, you're always so like cheerful. I love it. Like when we bump into each other, you're always like, oh, just so friendly.
You must have caught me on my good days. Personally, I'm very curious. Have you taken the MBTI test? Do you know your...
I have.
What is your type?
I'm ENFJ. What about you?
Stop.
Are you ENFJ?
Yeah.
You're ENFJ. Oh my gosh. God. Wait, do you know your fifth letter?
My what?
The like fifth letter? It's either A or T.
Oh,
like,
actually, no, I don't. I should go back and take that.
Yeah. So A is for assertive and T is for turbulent. So A.
Oh, I think I was people... T. But yeah, go on.
T. Okay. I'm A. Okay. Okay. Close though. We got 4 out of 5.
So assertive is you're more certain of your...
It's like a spectrum at the end of the day, so it's not like you're either or, but mm-hmm. I think assertive ENFJs tend to like not regret their decision after they make it, whereas turbulent ENFJs can sometimes like mull over their decisions, like wonder whether it was the right thing or not. Like that was one example, but do you think that sounds like you, or do you relate to that?
I feel like sometimes at times, not so much like regretting a decision, but before I make a decision, I definitely do go back and forth, and it does take me a while. But I think once I've set my heart on something, I'm kind of occupied in like what I'm doing at the moment.
I think yeah. That makes sense because the bulk of ENFJ, like the character profile is the protagonist. So it's like, I think once you set your mind, you're like, you will be the hero of the story.
I don't think I've met another friend that is one.
Wow. I'm honored. Yeah. But yeah, I believe ENFJ is like maybe 2% or 3% of the entire personality types. Lol, I was also obsessed with this, as you can see.
I had been obsessed, and then I got into it again like recently. And then I was like asking around my friends because like some types are compatible. And it turns out like my best friend is like the most compatible type with me, so
wow.
So I wanted to switch gears because I'm dying to hear about your new exciting project, your new nonprofit called I Believe.
Yeah. So going back to, you know how earlier I was talking about how when I came back to the Philippines, I started learning a lot more about the problems that was here. I mean, I'd always been aware of the problems and issues, but you know, like many things in my life, it felt very distant. And this like pandemic definitely woke me up to it, because the fact that I was able to continue my education online, which, you know, at the start people were like, oh, this like sucks or whatever, but you know, the more I thought about it and the more I compared my situation to the rest of my country, where people, you know, didn't even have stable Wi-Fi, didn't have the resources or capacity to continue online, it really like, I felt very humbled and very grateful that I was able to continue, even if, you know, I had to stay up to like 3 a.m. some days. Like, the fact that I could still continue and that I had the Wi-Fi to do so was like, it just meant a lot to me. And I wanted, and that moment, you know, made me so determined to do something with this this internet that I had access to. Because, you know, ever since I was 13, I always think I've been pretty resourceful with just kind of like you, doing what I want when I wanted it. So nobody in my family had supported my YouTube channel. I had no experience like filming, editing, doing anything, but because of the internet I was able to like self-teach myself. And so I wanted to try to do something for that now at an educational level. So I started this organization with my friend Imogen, who is a student at Oxford. We've never met, also, like most of my friends online. We started I Believe to help IB students, and IB, by the way, stands for International Baccalaureate. It's this high school program for the last 2 years, and it's a very like global education curriculum, and it's popular mostly in international schools. But there were a lot of students who were struggling because the program is like hard enough, and when it went online, people were just like plummeting, not just academically but mental health wise. And I knew that being an IB student and having this IB following, I could do something more to be reaching out to these communities. And so we started I Believe. It started off with just tutoring and mentoring for students who were mostly in like developing countries, who were in first generation IB school, so the ones that weren't fully resourced yet, that, you know, still had like teachers who were missing from certain subjects, so like students were really left to fend for themselves. And after that, we grew our community because there were so many high school students, actually, like juniors and seniors, who really wanted to help. And they were like, I want to help, like I Believe grow, like I'm so grateful for this community because it's so positive and encouraging. And that's also something when I was doing the IB I didn't have, because the IB is like pretty, my experience was like kind of toxic within students, at least. Like, my teachers were super supportive, but students could be really toxic about it, and also talk about how they're like, you know, IB drowning in like all this stress, and like IB is, you know, insert negative word there, and it was really discouraging. And I've always believed in education. I mean, I'm studying abroad, like I pursued my education abroad. I've always cared a lot about school, and I really think it is a way for people to, you know, unlock possibilities that they never thought was possible. And yeah, ever since we launched in July, we've just been working with new programs, from, you know, tutoring and mentoring, but also now live events and new video workshop series and expanding. So it's been really awesome, and I love the community so much.
Wow. I saw that you have almost like 70 something or 68 members who are like partners of the organization, and they're all like from different parts of the world.
Yeah, so that's our team, actually. I'd say like half of those are our grad tutors and mentors, and the other half are high school team members. But in terms of the community, we actually just launched the like community side, so separate from the team. This is like mostly for students, but recently we reached 400 members.
Wow.
Yeah.
So to be a member, is there an application process? How do you join?
So for the community, we're very open. So they do just have to fill up a form, tell us about how they've been affected during the pandemic, what they're hoping to look for in this community, because one thing we really value is supporting each other. So not just going in to be like, I need help with this, like I'm only here to, you know, help myself. Like, we, one of our biggest values is like, you are committed like to this community, not just for your grades, but because of the people that you can also support, that you can genuinely form connections with. And I think that's been one reason our community's been super strong, and like literally some of my closest friends this year have formed from this organization is because of that. And yeah, but if people don't want to join the community, we also just create resources. So we've written like I think around 100 articles too about just general IB advice, and I think that's where most people actually know about I Believe. Like, if I'm not mistaken, we had like 15,000 unique visitors from the website.
Wow. And if you want to like contribute to the services and partake in providing education as a student, is there an acquisition process that that your team reaches out to, or do interested parties like contact you guys?
Yeah, so for that we have a more like formal application. So if it's a high school student, we have a program called High School Ambassadors, where they can join one of our specific teams. They can write for, so they can either join writing and write for our blog, or they can join like social media and help with marketing or outreach, which is to reach out to like the first generation IB schools to form partnerships. But also we have the process for grads, so people who want to tutor or volunteer, we also just ask them, you know, like, how'd you do in IB, like why do you want to be part of this, because we think it's super important like why you're doing this. Like, it's not for the resume for us, like we don't talk about that at all. Like, and that's been the beauty of the community too, is like people really joined this because they wanted friendships, because just like me, they were alone in their room, you know, detached from people. I at least like had a hard time reaching a lot of my friends who were in the US because of time zones, and I found a lot of new friends from this because their time zones were closer, and it just reminded all of us that so many people were going through the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Was the idea of creating social impact always with you since you were younger?
I wish I could say that, but no. I think it was only, it was a process for me to first realize, number one, how important education was in my life, and that I think I only realized around high school. And then after that, I started realizing that I really loved creating communities and organizations. I think Cornell Creatives helped me see that at Cornell too. And I guess like where you mentioned earlier, the entrepreneurial mindset of, you know, you see problems and you just really love fixing them and putting your creativity to good use. I think all of those eventually compounded and then helped me realize that I think the next step is to do something for social impact using the skills I've learned in the Philippines, which is, well, not necessarily in the Philippines, but just like developing countries or communities that need help right now. And yeah, I think the next step after that is like, I'd love to see more about what I can do in the Philippines, maybe after I graduate, when I can actually go out, because I still have not left my house since March of last year.
That is a long time. And I see like a lot of my friends who are also doing nonprofits or startups, and I see a trend which I expect will become a part of the norm, that it's a lot about like services that create equal opportunities in education and financial services, and making things like law more accessible. And I do really love seeing my young friends set examples.
Yeah, I totally agree. That's a great movement, I think, is like this want to really empower the marginalized communities, or just communities who previously haven't had the platforms that other people have. And also to see youth be at the forefront of this has been like, it's been so empowering. I'm like, oh my gosh, nobody, you can't tell me I can't do this anymore, because right, like there are literally other people, you know, our age doing these things.
And it was so interesting that you mentioned like your relationship with Hannah, the YouTuber friend you co-hosted with, and Imogen. And because I was actually going to ask you, like, did you know them personally before, but you were like brought together online and had the same like vision and goals that you wanted to achieve. Tell me about like the community that was opened in front of you because of the projects that you've taken on so far. Initially, like, how do you find friends online or other places in the world who like share the same vision of with you, who like you may not know personally? Like, how did you like get in contact with them, and then Does that make sense?
Yeah. Okay, I love this question. And yeah, to go back to your earlier point, yeah, I met Hannah and Imogen because of a shared vision, not because they were like, hey, we want to be friends. You know? I mean, we of course, in the end, we became friends, and I'm so grateful for that. But I think in the case of Hannah and I, we wanted to do a collab because we had been watching each other's videos. We thought there was a similarity with both of us really liking productivity and the hustle culture back when it was a thing. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not about that anymore. But back when we were like, we think we can make a great collaboration. And so we collaborated, and then we continued to just follow each other and support each other. And for Imogen, she had reached out and she was like, hey, I know you're an IB student and you do a lot of videos to help other people. I also want to do the same, you know, with tutoring and mentoring. And I was like, yes. So we both, in both cases, we bonded over, yeah, that vision and that mission first. And after, you know, by working together naturally, it became a friendship. And now we just like catch up call, like Hannah, I'm calling next week just to like catch up because we've like just become friends. And yeah, so I think my experience with finding people in communities maybe a bit unique because I have a YouTube channel. So I think like one thing I'm really grateful for is that I kind of just say what's on my mind, and I'm like, I care about, you know, education, I care about creativity. And the beauty of it is my videos naturally reach the same people who relate to me. And so that's why I've never also thought of my viewers as just like fans or people at like a different level. I literally see them as people who are just like me, because if they watch my videos, they share a lot of the same thoughts I have. A lot of them will comment or like will DM, and I'll be like, this is exactly like, oh my gosh, like, where have you been my life? Like, uh-huh. You know, we're just on that same wavelength. And so in that way, I think that's how we bond.
Mm-hmm. And maybe that's why perhaps I was very like interested and loved watching your videos. Aww. Because it's the New Year's, my last question for you is, what is your new goal or bucket list that you want to get into, get through, get started?
Yeah, first thing is to leave my house, to just be part of the world again. I think I have just newfound appreciation for even the smallest things, because before, and I think you're also like an avid traveler.
Mm-hmm.
When I traveled, it was usually to see like, you know, these big landmarks or these huge destinations. But because these days I've literally just had the sky and some palm trees, and you know, I say like just the sky, but it's huge, it's mm-hmm. so enough to like sustain me every day. And just, oh my gosh, it's so like poetic, but like literally to just see the clouds, you know, change, and the colors change mm-hmm. every day, it's given me a lot of peace. And also I think in terms of bucket list things this year is I want to write more. I don't know where it'll lead, but last semester I took a poetry class and it was surprisingly like very replenishing, and I think I just want to see where that could go. Maybe write fiction. I think writing a book has always been a dream of mine. I don't really know yet I have an idea of how to get there, but I've also just want to like take things slowly a bit, because you know, last year has taught me, and I'm sure you, just how we should all slow down sometimes and how that can help us appreciate things around us. So yeah, a few projects I have in mind, but I'm also not jumping into anything and kind of letting it take me where it is, because that's also something I realize with creativity is it thrives best, for me at least, when you have space to let your thoughts wander and take shape.
Mm-hmm. And regardless of what form it takes that's required of you, like I also always need an incubation period where I'm kind of relaxed from doing work and I just take things slow and go on a walk and read books. I was thinking about like writing a book, so if you ever publish a book, I would love to go to your signing.
And no, you too. I'm sure you will publish a book now that you've like said it, and knowing you, Patricia, like you'll make it happen, so I'm excited for it.
Well, thank you. So that was all of my questions. Was there anything else you wanted to share?
No, except thank you for having me. Yep, now I'm saying it, because you know, like in podcasts normally like the host will be like, well, hello, welcome, like Patricia or whatever, and then it's like, I don't know, protocol I guess for the other person to be like, yeah, thank you for having me. Anyways, we're rule breakers here, so we'll do it at the end. Yeah,
I love that you came on today, and I love that we connected after like a long time of not seeing each other. Thank you for coming on the podcast and sharing your stories. I'm excited for all your projects coming up this year.
I can't wait to see where your podcast goes and that you're finally doing this too for you.
Thank you so much.